Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Nun Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss what it left off with yesterday, which was Rabbi Yochanan's shock for the Bnei Baishan. Bnei Baishan had a minhag from their forefathers that they did not work on Erev Shabbat. They wanted to be mevatel that minhag because it was economically difficult for them. And nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan says you have a minhag avotam v'yadam, and you can't abrogate that minhag that you got from your forefathers. So now we have other minhagim, Bnei Chuzai. And now gay the mafrishay chalav me'aruza. They used to be mafrish chalav from rice. So they had rice flour. Or rice cakes or rice bread, and they were mafrish challah from it, even though it's not designated as one of the five grains, and those are the ones that are chayav and challah, as we saw earlier in the Masechta, so with regards to the grains that are chametz, the grains that make matzah, and also the grains that are chayav in challah. So those grains are the five grains. Oriz is not included in that.
We have one dissenting opinion amongst the Tanaim, which is that of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri that we bumped into earlier in the Masechta.
We don't pask in that way. So Atu v'amrulei the Rabbi Yosef. So they came and told Rabbi Yosef about it. Amalahu. A zar, a non-kohen, should eat this challah in front of them because then they'll know that it's not really challah. So, eight ve'abaye, Rav Yosef's Tami at Abaye says to him, Dvarim ha-mutarim, or harim na'gen by an isur. If you have something that is mutar, and other people are noeg an isur, iyata reshay la tiran disnehem. You're not allowed to be matir in front of them. You can't go in front of other people who have a minhag to do something and then be matir in front of them because that is inappropriate, both from the perspective that you're now poking fun at them, you are now showing them that maybe it's not real. And number two is that they might learn from you to then be much more dismissive of not only minhagim, but also of halachot sukkot. We don't allow you to be matir in front of them. So how is Rav Yosef telling someone to go in front of these Bnei Chuzai and eat the challah that they took off the rice? Even though it's true that the challah was not real challah, but nevertheless, that was their minhag, and how is Rav Yosef matir in front of them? From Alos, Rav Yosef says back to Rabbi Velav mi itmar Allah. Don't we have a qualification of this principle that you're not allowed to be matir, something that others are knowing and isur in front of them? From Rav Chista b'kutai, only speaking about kutai. Kutai here is hard to know what the Gemara is speaking about, but it seems to be it's speaking about people who are not so well educated in halacha. Kutai could be referencing to the kutim, who were not so scrupulous necessarily in certain halachos. And the fear is, if you're matir and minog in front of them, that'll have broader ramifications. Well, they'll just extrapolate that to other areas of halacha and say it's not so important. Even though you're keeping a minhag, that doesn't necessarily have real basis. Nevertheless, if you are matir it, the ramifications are too great, and therefore we say keep the minhag, and you're not allowed to be matir in front of them. So that's the case of kutai, so that's not applicable here to Bnei Chuzai. To which Abai responds, kutai my taima. What's the reasoning behind the kutai? Mishum de misarche milto, because they will make a mistake. They will extrapolate your being matir the minhag to other areas of halacha. Hanachini shname sarche milto. The people of Bnei Chuzai are also not so well educated or not so well steeped in halacha. Therefore, if you're matir the challah of orez in front of them, they'll start to be mekil in all forms of challah, and they won't keep the halacha in other areas where it really is the halacha. So you can't be matir in front of them. Halama Rav Ashi, Chazinan. Rav Ashi says this is what you should do. Seems to me this is obviously a much later time. He's not a contemporary of Abaye and Rav Yosef, but this is Rav Ashi's solution to the problem as how do you handle a situation like this where they're knowing something that is not a necessity, and how are you matir in front of them without causing them to extrapolate that to other areas of halacha? Chazinan, Iruban, Orez, Achle, the majority of people in that area eat rice flour, rice cakes, rice bread. Lo nichla zar ba'payu. Then you shouldn't be mekiel with regards to the challah in front of them. Dilma mishtakachach torat challah minayu. Because basically this is their staple product, and this is the only area that they keep this din of challah. If you're matir it here, then when it comes to real grains, they won't know that there's halacha of challah. So better to leave it in place and not be matir in front of them. Viruban dagan achle. On the other hand, if the majority of the consumers in that area eat grains, the five grains that are chayav in challah, nechla zar ba'payu, then you should be matir in front of them. Because then you might have problems of them mixing it together, which is that you have from rice dough that is chayav in challah, and you also have from the five minei dagan dough that is chayav in challah. So instead of taking off each one individually, you might take off of them jointly, and the problem with that is the orez is really patur, and the dagan is really chayav. So if you take from the orez on the dagan, then you're taking off something that's from patur on something that is chayav, and there's no real chalav been taken off, and therefore the minei dagan remain tevel. and it'll be a problem. The other way around, if you take off from the Dagan on the Orez, then again, the Orez isn't really Chayav. But when you take off too much from the Dagan, you're giving the Kohen a mixture of Challah and Tevel, because the extra Challah that you gave him wasn't really Challah, and therefore it really was Tevel, because you needed to take Challah off of it, not give it as Challah. So it'll cause a problem. The Tosafot points out that you also have to adjust for the fact that we're only allowed to take off Min B'mino. In general, a principle with regards to Chumot, Masrot, Challah, is that you can only separate off of the same type or same species. And so over here, why would you be mixing Orez and the five minei Dagan? So that's what it says. It's a case where there's actually a dough made of that mixture. So if the dough is made of that mixture, then we're afraid that you might get some patur and some chayav and get it mixed up. Even though in generally, when something is a blila, where it's mixed together well, we assume that the ratio of the components that are put in there also are the ratio of the components when you take off a sampling from them. So when you take off challah from a dough that's a mixture of different grains, we assume that you captured all the grains in that sample, and it shouldn't be a problem, because then the patur covers the patur, and the chayav covers the chayav. So the fold comes up with a case where one side of it has more rice, or the percentage is not well mixed, and therefore you're going to end up taking off a larger portion from the patur, the chiyuv, which shouldn't have happened in that situation. And that's what we're afraid of. Now, the Gemara says, Gufa, it discusses this principle. Dvarim ha-mutarim, v'acherim nalhaginu ba'en isur, hi atar ha-shay la-tiram bifneim. Something where a person has a practice to do something, make it asur, not engage in this activity, you're not allowed to then be matir in front of them. Amrav Chista, and here's the qualification that we noted before, is bikutai askinan. Dealing with people who don't understand that this is a minhag, and therefore there are others that don't have this minhag, and if you're matir in front of them, they're going to think that it's okay to abrogate minhagim and abrogate other dinim. Kulei alma lo. Is it really true that that only has application to kutai, not to other individuals, meaning that in normal situations, do we not have that same requirement not to be matir in front of people, things that they keep an isur with regards to? Batanyo, don't we have a breita? Rochatzim shnei achim ke'echad, ve'en rochatzim shnei achim be'kabul. So the practice, or the general practice, is that two brothers can go to the bathhouse together, and we don't worry about it. What we're worried about is not exactly clear in the Gemara. It's going to come up in a number of the issues here. Rashi notes that it's a problem of hirhur. We're worried about someone who sees another party that is naked, who they're close to, or where they originated from, and that'll cause hirhurim about how they were created. Or maybe parties that are very close to each other and spend a lot of time together, and then when they are naked together, there might come to be some untoward behavior. It seems very far-fetched, and for that reason, it's clear here that the Braita believes that there is no problem. But yet, in the city of Kabul, they had the minhag, or the practice, that two brothers did not go into the bathhouse together, were not naked in the bathhouse together. Kabul is found somewhere in the Galilee. Maseh b'Yehuda b'Hillel banav shel Rabban Gamliel. There was an incident with Yehuda and Hillel, who were the children of Rabban Gamliel. Seems to be that the Rabban Gamliel we're speaking about here is the son of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And therefore the Yehuda in the case here is Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, who is the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. He is one of the first generation of Amoraim, and he's mentioned in a number of places in the Gemara with regards to Takanot, including one of the major ones with regards to being matir shemen shel akum in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah, that Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyo Beit Dino were matir. That's Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyo, that's the Yehuda that we're speaking about here, and his brother Hillel, who were grandchildren of Yehuda Nasi, they went for Yachatzu Shneim Kechad B'Kabul. They happened to be visiting, or they were in the city of Kabul, and they went into the bathhouse together. V'laz Alem Kol Amidina. And then rumors start to circulate about them that they are these important individuals, and yet they're not keeping to the practices of the neighborhood, and they thought these were religious norms, and yet they were abrogating these religious norms. Amrumi, Amenu, Lurinu, Kach. They said, we never saw anything like this in our lives, where two brothers went into the bathhouse together. Benishmat Hillel, Biatzad, Bayit, Achid, Son. And Hillel slipped out and went to the outer chamber of the bathhouse. I mean, there are a number of chambers in the bathhouse where you get undressed, where you cool down, where you heat up, all different chambers, and he just went out of the one where his brother was located so that they would not be in violation of this minhag that they had in Kabul. So you see here that even though the minhag that they had was a place that seems to be a normal place and not kutai, and they had a minhag to be oser, we don't allow people to go ahead and be matir in front of them, because they were respectful. Once they realized there was such a minhag, they were respectful of it and pulled out. And they didn't want to just say that it's mutar, that there is no problem with this.
Yotzim be kur de tuson, the Shabbat. You're allowed to go out with, it's not clear here what exactly these are. It seems to be that the way that the Rabbeinu Hananu explains them over here is, mnal shein lo akev v'hu sandi. It is a shoe without a heel to it, and they're like sandals. It seems to be something akin to slippers, where there's no back to them, or that they are sock-like inserts that went into the shoes, some sort of insole. But things that you wear that are wide and loosely fitting and comfortable. So the minhag or the practice is that people go out with them on Shabbat. Another city in the Galil where they had the practice, unlike the halacha, to not wear these on Shabbat. Once again, Yudah and Hillel, Banav Shavu Gamliel, Shiatsu Bekur de Kison B'Shabbat Bibiri. They once again got themselves into a little bit of hot water. They started to wear these shoes, slippers, sandals, whatever they are on Shabbat in Biri, even though that wasn't the practice there. Once again, rumors started to circulate. People were in disbelief. We never saw anybody ever do this. So instead of saying to them that it was mutar, they slipped them off. And they handed them over to their avadim, which is interesting in of itself, because when it comes to Shmirat Shabbat, there's an obligation of Shmirat Shabbat on in an individual, as well as their avadim. Certainly, if it's a Jewish eved, for sure there's a din of Shmirat Shabbat. But even for a non-Jewish eved, an eved kenani, there's still a din of Shvitat HaShabbat. And so then giving it over to their servants didn't necessarily solve the problem. So what you have to say is either that the people were only really worried or focused, and since their stature came and they were then abrogating the halacha or the minhag that they had in this that meant something to the people. If some Joe Schmo or some Eved was doing that, they'd be less bothered by that situation. Maybe that's why they handed it off to their avadim. Or you could say that when it comes to the requirement of Shvita for an Eved Knani, that deals with Melachot Doraita. Doesn't mean that all these Surei Drabonon or Minhagim necessarily apply to the Eved Knani. And that's why they handed over to their Avadim. Below Ratzulam Arahem Mutarim Atem. Once again here, they didn't want to just come out straight and say that there is no Isur. That's the practice here, but there's really no Isur. So again, you see that in a regular situation, in which people have a minhag b'asur, Yehuda and Hillel were unwilling to be matur in front of them. And now a third incident. V'yoshvim al safsalei nachrim b'shabbat. Allowed to sit on the benches of nachrim b'shabbat. Seems to be that these were accoutrements, props in the shuk, and people used to sit on them to do business transactions. So the fear is that if someone sits on them, that they're engaged in business activity. But we don't worry about that. We don't assume that. We just assume that a person's passing by there on Shabbat, and if the shuk is closed, or if there's nobody Jewish in that area, then we don't worry about them transacting with people, or that they're sitting on the bench in order to transact. Despite that fact, in Akol, the practice was not to sit on the Safsalim of Nachrim. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. There was an incident with Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. It's not clear which Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is. Other Girsaot have Birabban Gamliel, which then might have been the father of Yehuda and Hillel. Sheshav al Safsalei Nachrim b'Shabbat b'Akko, that he sat down on one of these benches of the Nachrim on Shabbat in Akko. Lazalav kol medina, and everybody started to talk about him. How could he do this? Doesn't keep Shabbat. How is it possible? Amrumi, Yameinu L'Reinu Kach. We never saw anybody act like this. Nishmat Agabi Akarka. He slipped off the bench onto the ground. Alo Ratzalom Alahem Mutarim Atem. He didn't want to say straight to their faces that it was Mutar. So the Gemara has to answer here. You have three cases in a row where individuals were in what seemed to be normal cities. And despite that fact, when they were faced with a challenge of the minhag of the city, which they didn't practice and wasn't widely practiced, they nevertheless slipped out of the situation and didn't tell them straight out that it was mutar. So how could you say that the din of Dvarim HaMutarim, Acharim Nagum Ben Isur, is qualified by Rav Chista, who says it only applies to Kutai. Here we see it applying more broadly than just to Kutai. My answer is, people who are not in the main areas of the cities. Here it says, that they were overseas, although it seems to be that these cities were in Eretz Yisrael, in the Galil, and even Akko, which is a port city, but they were not areas that were well established halachically.
because they did not have a strong rabbinic presence, or they didn't have a strong halachic backing there. So therefore, they are kikutim damu. In that kutai is not a statement only about kutim. It means anybody who has a similar profile to the kutai, which is that they don't really understand the halacha so well, and they don't have chachamim who they defer to, and therefore, if you're matir these things in front of them, they're going to come again to the wrong conclusion and extrapolate it to other areas of minhagim that are more base minhagim, or to halacha psukah, where they're going to be matir, because they're going to say, well, they didn't care about this, why should care about other areas where there really is a reason to be oser? So the Gemara now says about this, Bishlama Safsalei Nachrim, I understand why they had a minhag by Safsalei Nachrim, not to sit on Shabbat, Mishum Demechsei Kemechakum Memkar. Looks like you are transacting or doing business on Shabbat. Again, in most places, they didn't worry about this. It wasn't a chashash. But in Akko, for whatever reason, they felt or they extended that Isur to the area of Safsalei Nachrim, and it had some basis. It wasn't just a baseless minhag, because it related to the problem that it looks like you're doing business transacting on Shabbat. B'kur de kisonami, dilma mishtalfin, v'ati le'tzunu abar amot b'shut rabim. Same thing there. Even though the more wide practice was not to oser them on Shabbat, the minhag in the city of Biri was not to wear them because of the fear that they might be, they're loose, and they might slip off, or you might take them off in b'shut rabim and carry them to carry them. So there again is a basis for the minhag, even though it was not widely accepted and wasn't a chashash that the Chazal were really worried about. El Rochatzim, when it came to two brothers bathing together, my time alone, it seems to be a baseless minhag to say that two brothers can bathe together, and then why in Kabul did they have such a practice? Kedetanya, im kol adam rochetz. Person can bathe together with anyone else. In their day, the bathhouses were public bathhouses, and therefore people went together to the bathhouse. You can bathe with other people. You don't have to worry about being naked with other people. It's not an issue. Chutz me'aviv v'chamiv. The exception of one's father and one's father-in-law, ubal imo, or the husband of his mother, meaning his stepfather, ubal achuto, or the husband of his sister, his brother-in-law. Aside from those four individuals, one can be in the bathhouse with anyone else. Now, the reason behind this, again, is what we discussed before. Rashi says, with regards to the father and the father-in-law, maybe the stepfather, that a person will hear hurim about where they came from, and therefore those would be inappropriate thoughts. With regards to Balachoto, similar because of his sister, he'll have thoughts about where he and his sister came from. Seems to be somewhat far-fetched, the chashash in the first place. But that's the chashash about why you shouldn't go together to the bathhouse with these individuals. Rav Yehuda matir, ve'aviv mipnei kvod aviv. Yehuda is matir with his father because it's out of respect for his father. V'hu adin le'balimo. And the same thing is true with his stepfather. With regards to that halacha, it's not clear whether Rav Yehuda is saying that we always allow you to go with your father or your stepfather, or we allow you to go where there's a mitigating factor. And the mitigating factor is that he needs help, and therefore it would be kibud av to go with him, then it would be appropriate to go with him, and that would override our chashashot, or our worries about the negative things that could come from that, and therefore that's only when it's allowed. But generically, he would agree with the chachamim that if there's no need for kvod aviv, or for a kvod balimo, that you wouldn't be allowed to go. V'atu inhu, and this is where the minhag of Kabul stemmed from, which is that they extended this. V'gazur b'shnei achim mishum balachuto. They made a gzeirah by two brothers, unto a brother-in-law. And so because the brother-in-laws were already restricted, I mean the person's sister's husband, so though too he was also restricted with his own brother, they extended it to that as well. Now again, the original takana or gzeira seems far-fetched, the minhag seems even more far-fetched, but it's a minhag that had some basis, as the Gemara is indicating over here. Tana, Talmid lo yerchatz im rabo. A Talmid, a student, should not go to the bathhouse together with his Rebbe. But as Rebbe needs him, then it is mutar. And again here, this seems to me to be helpful maybe in explaining the other restrictions, which is why you would think maybe going with one's father, father-in-law, or stepfather was inappropriate. It has nothing to do with Hirurim, but has to do with respect. Like over here, a Talmid shouldn't go with his Rebbe because it's just disrespectful. It's something where there should be some distance between those parties, between a child and a parent, and therefore it would be inappropriate to go. That explains three out of the four instances. It's much harder with brother-in-law to explain that. Elim Kane, you say that there's a big age gap, and the sister or the brother-in-law are much older, and he's due respect from this individual, and that's almost like a child-to-parent relationship.
But that seems to be what's being said here with regards to the Talmid and his Rebbe. And again, you have the qualification that if his Rebbe needs him, then that it's more important for him to go and to give that respect to his Rebbe to help him rather than to not go with him because of the problems or the lack of respect of being together. So that seemed to be along the lines of what Yehuda said before. And if that's true, it would be a mitigating force, not a blanket head there to go with one's parents, but only when there was a need for them to go along with the parents. Now, the Gemara seems to indicate over here that when it comes to Kutai, and when it comes to these cities where they were not well-versed in halacha, or they didn't have a strong rabbinic presence, that one is not allowed to be matir minhagim, that they are noheg the isur. But that would imply that in other situations where that was not the case, and you go to a place where there are noheg and isur, and you could be matir it in front of them, because we're not worried about it being extrapolated, we're not worried about it undermining anything. It's only in these precarious places that we worry about you doing such a thing. And Tosafot asks, well then, what do you do with our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that when you go from one location to another location, you take the chumrot of the makom shiyatza misham, and the chumrot of the makom shehalach misham. You take the chumrot of both places. Well, why do you have to do that? Our Gemara seems to indicate that you could be matir, you could do things that are asur in that location and be matir in front of them without any issue. So why is it that our Mishnah seems to indicate you can't be matir, whereas our Gemara here seems to think that you can be matir as long as it's not one of these problematic places? That's one question. The second problem we have is a Gemara in the beginning of Chulin, which says that Rebbe was matir Beit Shan. So even though Beit Shan was knowing that they took off Tumot and Masrot and they assumed that they had issues of Shemitah and Tzvichim because they thought they were part of Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi came along and said Beit Shan is classified as Chutz La'aretz with regards to Kedushat Ha'aretz. So how did Rabbi come along and be matir in front of those individuals or in Beit Shan? The Teretz Rabbeinu Nissen explains that the case by Rabbi is different than the case over here. Because when we say that Devarim Mutarim and Arecherim Nahugum Ben Yisur, you're not allowed to be matir in front of them, that's only in a case where they know that it's really mutar. They know it's really mutar, and they're noeg isur, then you can't come along and be matir or do things in front of them that make it that it is a heter. Whereas, if they are noeg and isur, mita'ut, out of a mistake or a mistaken assumption, then over there you're allowed to be matir in front of them. And that's basically what the situation was in Beit Shan. Beit Shan, they were noeg that it had a kedushat aretz, even though that wasn't true. But that was a mistaken premise. They didn't understand or they didn't know that it could be mutar, they just thought that that was part of Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi comes along and clarifies from them that it's a minhag ta'ut, or the practice here is incorrect because you don't need to keep it, it's not Eretz Yisrael, it's chutz la'aretz for kedushat ha'aretz. Whereas in the cases here, in our Gemara, the Rabbeinu Nissim claims are all cases where they knew that it was mutar, but they were no egisur anyway. So now, if that's the case, then what are you worried about, like in the case of the dough by the Orez? Why are you worried about the fact that they're going to be mafrish mamei chiyuv ala patur, patur ala chayav? Because they know that it's really patur, and they're just noeg isur. So why are you worried about them mixing it up? Rabbeinu Nissim answers that not everybody knows. Most of the people know, or a good part of the people know that. There are many people that are ignorant about this, and therefore we're worried about them practicing in a certain way, that if we don't straighten out the situation, they're going to make the mistake of mixing up Orez with Dagan, and then taking off me a patur ala chayav or a chayav ala patur. And that's why there was a problem there. That leads us into the next stage, which is, okay, once we've established now, if you have a minhag ta'ut, you're allowed to be matir for those individuals if they're practicing on the wrong premise. If they know that they are mutar and they're still practicing an isur, there you're not allowed to be matir in front of them. That's inappropriate. But that's only true when we're talking about people who are not going to act properly. They don't have a strong rabbinic presence. But it seems to me that if it was regular people, it wasn't the Kutai, it wasn't B'nai Medinat Hayam, that you would be allowed to be matir in front of them. And that brings us to the next stage, which is what about our Mishnah that says you have to keep Chumrei HaMakom Sheyotzen Zom and Chumrei HaMakom Shehalach Lasham. The Re answers in the Bayit Tosafot, the Matnitinari, the Minhag Choshuv Sheneigu Alpi Talmidei Chachamim. There's another stage of Minhag, and that's a Minhag that was instituted by strong rabbinic backing or really strong Talmidei Chachamim. Whereas the minhagim that we're speaking about here are minhagim that were instituted by locales themselves. The people themselves were knowing that, but they didn't have strong rabbinic backing. They didn't have strong Talmidei Chachamim that guided them to that minhag.
So according to this, there are now actually three different types of minhagim. There's a minhag that comes with strong rabbinic endorsement, and that type of minhag, you can't be matir in front of anyone. That's the Mishnah speaking about, that you take chumei amakom shiatzam isham, and chumei amakom shalach lisham. There's another type of minhag, which is a minhag that people know is mutar, but they still want to be noeg isur. But that isur is something that came from the people themselves. There was a practice of that locale, but didn't have strong rabbinical backing. Over there, you're not allowed to be matir in front of them if it's a place that does not have a strong halachic environment to it, or it's the kutai. There you can't be matir. If it's not those locations or doesn't have that status, then you could be matir in front of them. And then there is a final type of minhag, which is a minhag ta'ut. Mechtes that came into play because of a mistake. It was based on a wrong assumption or a mistaken presumption. And over there, we matter everywhere because you're just correcting the mistaken assumption that people had. And that's what Rabbi did in Beit Shan, which is that he was matir of Beit Shan, even though they weren't necessarily a strong halachic area, but he did it because they misunderstood the law, or they thought mistakenly that they were part of Eretz Yisrael because he shot the Aretz, and they really were not, and he was just correcting that misinformation. On the other hand, Rashba quoted in the Tosfot solves the problem of the Mishnah in a different way, which is to say that a Mishnah, as we're going to see later on today's daf, was a case where Ein Dato Lachzor, a place where you come to that new location and you have no plans to leave it, then you have to take on the Chumrei HaMakom that you came to, even though it's a locha that should be mutar, and these people know it's mutar, but they're no egg isur. Now that you've joined their city, you have to keep that isur along with them, and therefore it is binding on you, even though technically, if you were not to stay there, you could be matir in front of them, and you wouldn't have to worry about it. So that's how he solves the steer from doing the Mishnah, and what we're seeing in the Gemara now. Now the Gemara continues with other case law, with other incidents where we have the same type of idea, where there's someone who's knowing Isur or Heter, and they don't want to indicate to others. Ki'ata Rabba Bar Chano. Rabba Bar Chano learnt by Rabbi Yochanan. He was one of those individuals that actually went back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. This point he's found in Bavel, but he had learnt by Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael. Achal Da'itra, he ate this fat that was on the curvature of the stomach. In the animal, there's certain fats that are problematic. The chelev of the animal is a sore and needs to be peeled off and cannot be eaten. There's shuman, there are other areas of the fat of the animal which are mutarim. So there is one area around the keba, the curvature of the keba, where Bnei Eretz Yisrael, who are bekiim in this matter, they do eat it, and they believe that it's not chelev, and they don't peel it off, or they leave it and utilize it. Whereas Bnei Bavel took a more hands-off approach with regards to it, because either they weren't so well-versed in it, or because they didn't want to take a risk, because you have to separate it from the other fats of the keba, which are problematic. Similar to maybe what happened with the Gita Nasheh, where within Eretz Yisrael today, there's a minhag to remove it, whereas in Chutz Laretz, they don't do that. So Nikur Agid, to remove it in Eretz Yisrael, which they do practice, whereas in Chutz Laretz they don't practice it. So too, there was this practice in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Bar Chano was coming from Eretz Yisrael and learning by Rabbi Yochanan. He ate that type of fat. So he was sitting and eating that fat. Olegabe Rabbi Vira Sabo v'Rabbi Brei de Rabuna. So two Amoraim from Bavel come and appear before him. Came into Chazinu. When he saw them coming, Kasya Minayu, he covered it up so they couldn't see it. Truth is that that's pretty amazing that they would have been able to identify what he was eating. Must be that that fat was very identifiable, or it was still attached to that part of the body that they could make it out where it was coming from. But he was fearful that they would know what he was eating. And in Bavel, they don't eat that. So Atu Amrulei the Abaye, they went and told Abaye. The other version of this Gemara is that it is Rav Avyo, Saba, and Rav Abrei de Rav Huna. And then it says over here, Amrulei La'abo. They went and told their father, Rav Huna, which means that they were brothers. Amrulei Shavinchu Kikutai. He, Rav Bar Chano, treats you like the Kutai, which means that we saw before that when there's a Minag Le'esor, and here we know that it was Mutar, and the Bnei Bavel knew it was Mutar as well, but they still were Noeg Yisur, similar to Gita Nasheh, where Nikur Agid is done in Eretz Yisrael, and nobody in Chutz Laretz will say that that's not mutar, but nevertheless, they don't practice that. They don't do that in Chutz Laretz. Someone who does have that practice, so now he comes and eats that in front of the other individuals, they don't have to feel bad about it. They don't have to feel like they're being matir in front of them because they know it's mutar. They're no egg isur, and he's not no egg isur. So over here, why did he cover up from them? The only time we said that you had to cover it up or not tell them the truth was when they were individuals or weren't well steeped in halacha. If they weren't well steeped in halacha, then we were afraid that they would take that wrong meaning that they would extrapolate the information and therefore then carry it over into other practices or even into real halacha. And so then we're not matir in front of them, even though it really is mutar, it's mutar for you to do it because they were noe gisur. So we saw in the Tosfot, as long as there is a basis for the minag, not that it's a minag ta'ut, which is what the Gemara did before, justify all those minagim. Here it's a based minhag, but it was a minhag isur that they understood that it was the isur, and yet here he's covering it up from them. So what Rav Huna or Abaye is saying to them is that he's treating you like kutai, and he's not willing to be matur in front of you because he's afraid of what you're going to think or what you're going to do with that information. But Rabba Bar Bar Chana lately had its non. What about the other aspect, which is what Tosfot was trying to address before, about our Mishnah? That notin alav chumrei makom shiyatzam isham, chumrei makom shalak lisham. Why doesn't he have to practice like the Bnei Bavel? He was in Eretz Yisrael, he came to Bavel. Yes, in Eretz Yisrael they were matir, but now he's in Bavel. So that's the makom shalach l'sham. He should have to keep the chumrot of that place. Amar Abaye, hani mile, that's only true when it's mi Bavel to Bavel. If you're traveling within different cities in Bavel, umi Eretz Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, or different within different cities within Eretz Yisrael, there you have to keep the chumrei makom shiyatzam isham, as well as the chumrei makom shalach l'sham, inami mi Bavel le Eretz Yisrael. Or even when you're traveling from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, if they have a chumra, you have to keep the chumra of Eretz Yisrael. If you had a chumra in Bavel, you have to keep that chumra as well. Aval, mi Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, lo. When you go from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, that's not the case. Da anan, kevan da anan kaifina nuhu. Because we are subject to them. Therefore, abdinu kabataya, we act like them. Tosafot says the girsha should be lo abdinu kabataya, we don't act like them. Or as the way Rashi interprets it is the way that Tosafot actually explains it, which is that since Eretz Yisrael has more stature, status with regards to psak halacha, they're considered to be more bikiim in the areas of halacha. Therefore, when they have a practice, they can hold on to their practice even when they come to Bavel, because the people in Bavel will not just assume that whatever they're doing is abrogating the isur or the minhag in Bavel. They'll say that they know better from Eretz Yisrael. And whether that means that the way that the Gemara reads, therefore we should adopt their practices, or more along the lines of what it seems is that even though they're going to practice differently than us, we're not going to be choshesh for that because we think that they're just better experts. We don't have the expertise. They have the expertise. So they're out there and we don't worry about it. So that's why Rabbi Bar Chana was coming from Eretz Yisrael, Talmid of Rabbi Yochanan, didn't worry about eating Ayitra in Bavel because he was coming from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. And Bnei Bavel or Kaifinu are subordinated to the Psak Halacha of Eretz Yisrael. They're Kafuf to the Halacha of Eretz Yisrael. Tosafot points out that even though in the beginning of Masechet Sanhedrin, it makes it sound the other way around, that Bavel has the upper hand over Eretz Yisrael. He says, Tahani Mila Afkuye Mamona. That's only regards to monetary or civil matters. Do Bnei Bavel have a stronger stand than Eretz Yisrael? But with regards to Isser Veheter and Smicha, Bnei Eretz Yisrael have the upper hand there, and that's what we're speaking about here, obviously, is Isur Veheter, and that's why Rabbi Bar Chana did not abide by the minog of Bavel, even though he did cover it up from those individuals that are coming. I think you could say that, not like Abaye or their father who said that he was treating like Kutai, I think he was just being respectful out of the fact that he knew that they were noeg Isur, and even though he could do it, and he could just do it in front of them without any inhibitions, he still was respectful because he knew there were no Egisur and therefore he covered it up in front of them. And that might be, again, what the answer is saying over here, which is that, yes, he had the right to do it, but he was still being good about it and not just eating in front of everyone. He did it privately and didn't show others that he was doing it. Or Rav Ashi suggests that Pilu Teimu Eretz Yisrael Bavel, maybe even from Eretz Yisrael Bavel, you're always kafuf wherever you go to the minog of the place you go to and the minog that you left from, whichever is more chamur. So then why over here was Rabbi Bar Chana not bound by the minog in Bavel, the Asur? That's only true when you're going to live in that new location permanently, when you're going to take up residence in that new location. So when you're going to take up residence there, then when you had Chumrot where you came from, you have to keep those Chumrot. And when you get to the new location, you got to pick up the Chumrot of that location because now you're going to be living there. So Rabbi Bar Chana, datolak zorabo. Rabbi Bar Chana intended to go back to Eretz Yisrael and therefore he wasn't bound by the Chumrot of Bavel. So there are two possible answers as to why Rabbi Bar Chana didn't feel bound by the practice in Bavel, either because he intended to go back to Eretz Yisrael, or because Eretz Yisrael trumps Bavel with regards to Minhagim and Halacha, and therefore he didn't need to abide by the Minhagim of Bavel. Amalei Rabbi Bar Chana the Bnei, my son, Lo tochal lo mifranai velo shelo b'fanai. Even though I have this practice here in Bavel to eat this ayitra, still for you, I don't want you to continue that practice that I had. Anishra iti ad Rabbi Yochanan shachal. I saw Rabbi Yochanan eat it, and therefore I have a direct mesora from Rabbi Yochanan that he did eat it. Dayu Rabbi Yochanan the smokalav. He's worthy enough for me to rely on him. He's a big Talmud Chacham. He was matir. And therefore I saw him being matir, I saw with my own eyes, therefore I can practice this way. Bifanav, ubshalofanav, whether I'm in front of him, whether I'm not in front of them, in either of those situations, it's mutar for me. But ata, you, lo reita uto, you never saw him. Lo tochal ben bifanai, ben shalo bifanai. You can't eat it, whether you're in front of me, or whether you're not in front of me. You have no right, you don't have that misora, and therefore you can't continue that practice that I had from Rabbi Yochanan. So it's gonna end with me, because I saw Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Bachana says, after me, you can't continue because you're now in Bavel. The majority of people here keep it l'chumra and don't eat it. And meantime, the only person you know that's eating it is me. But I'm not the person that you can rely on for that mesora. Pliga dididay adiday. And that statement of Rabbi Bachana seems to be contradictory with another position that we see from Rabbi Bachana. Dama Rabbi Bachana, Sachli Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar. Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar told me, one time I went behind, or I was following Rabbi Shimon ben Rabbi Yossi ben Lekunya into a garden, and he is one of the later Tanaim, a peer of Rabbi Yehuda ben Nasi, and interacted with a lot of the Amoraim in the first generation of Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael. And he was a son-in-law of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, and that's why over here he's quoting a story about himself in front of Rabbi Shimon Yochai, ben Natal, Svichei Kruv. He went ahead and he took aftergrowths of the cabbage, Bachal, ben Natanli. He ate, and then he handed it to me. But Marli, he said to me, Bini, b'fanai ochol. In front of me, you can eat this. Shelo b'fanai lo tochal. But not in front of me, you can't eat it. Ani shereit et Rabbi Shimon Yochai shachal. This is Rabbi Shimon ben Rabbi Yossi ben Lekunya. He says, I saw my father-in-law, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, eat this, and therefore I have a strong mesora from Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, even though he goes against the majority in halacha, the chachamim who passed in that way. Therefore, I who saw him, and he is my posek, and he's my mora da'atra, tadayhu Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, b'smochalav b'fanav, shlo b'fanav. Therefore, he's a strong enough individual that I can rely on him, whether I'm in front of him, or not in front of him, I have that strong mesora. Atah, you don't have that direct mesora from Shimon bar Yochai, and the majority paskins against that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai against Rabbi Shimon. Therefore, b'fanai achol, when you're in front of me, you can do it because then you have a clear mesora from Shimon bar Yochai, and you can rely on me, who's relying on Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. But shelo b'fanai, but if you're not in front of me, lo tochal, you may not eat it because it's not a strong enough mesora. You didn't see the Bala Memra, Rabbi Shimon, who you can rely on. You didn't see him. You only have it in hearsay from me. And since you only have it as hearsay from me, that's not enough for you to continue that practice when you're not in front of me, because the majority goes against that. So now here you have Rabbi Barchana telling over this story. And in this story, there's a difference between what happened in the previous story. In the previous story, Rabbi Barchana said that I can rely on Rabbi Yochanan, whether I'm in front of him or not. And you, my child, can't rely on him no matter what. Whereas over here, Rabbi Barchana brings the story of Rabbi Shimon ben Rabbi Yossi ben Lekunya, who says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar that you can rely on me when you're in front of me, you just can't rely on me when you're not in front of me. I, who saw Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, can rely whether I'm in front of him or not. But you, who only got it through hearsay, can only rely on it when you're in front of me, or only when you're in my presence, or you're in under my purview, then you can eat it. So over there you see that that should have been the same halacha with regards to Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Barchana, when he told his son. He should have been able to tell his son, when you're in front of me, you can eat it. Just you can't eat it when you're not in front of me, because I saw Rabbi Yochanan, but you only have it hearsay from Rabbi Yochanan from me. And so that is a stira within the view of Rabbi Barchana, which the Gemara does not address, but just points out that inconsistency in his position. Now the Gemara says, my Rabbi Shimon. What is this issue of Rabbi Shimon? Now the Gemara is going to get into what's called svichim. Svichim are aftergrowths, and this has to do with Shemitah or Shvi'it. That's the upcoming year is going to be a Shemitah year. And Shemitah does come around every 7 years, so it's worthwhile to understand what the din is with regards to svichim. Svichim are aftergrowths that grow from seeds that were dropped during the previous harvest and then they grew or they planted themselves or the wind blew earth over them, and ever they're able to grow by themselves. So the aftergrowth, there are growth that happens without any aiding or any input from an individual, and then they grow on Shvi'it. What it seems from this is that those Svichim, those aftergrowths, are problematic on Shvi'it. Just like planting on Shvi'it is problematic, and if you plant something on Shvi'it, you can't eat it because it's done by Isur. So too, something that happens by itself also is Asur. As we're going to see in 1 second, is a machlok between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. Seems to be, according to Rabbi Kiva, it's an Isur Doraita. So over there, you don't have to give an explanation for it because the Torah says it's Asur. The other hand, the Chachamim, who disagree with Rabbi Akiva, they believe that it's only an Isur Derabanan or a Gezeira Derabanan. Rashi claims that this issue of Svichim is connected to something called Bi'ur Perot Shvi'it, which is the requirement that when certain vegetation during the Shvi'it is no longer available out in the fields, then one has to be Mevaer, has to get rid of that Kedushat Shvi'it, those Perot Kedushat Shvi'it. According to most Rishonim, that means you just have to be Mafkir them, you just have to make them Hefker available to anyone, and then you overcome the problem of Bi'ur. According to others, seems to indicate that you have to actually burn them, you have to rid yourself of them when it comes to Zman HaBi'ur. So Rashi claims that there's a correlation between the Svichim and the Bi'ur Shvi'it, which is that when Bi'ur Shvi'it comes around, the Svichim are no longer permissible. And that means that until that point in time, the Svichim were totally fine, only at the Zman HaBi'ur does it become problematic. And the reason is because the point of any vegetation that grows on Shvi'it is that it be Hefker for everyone, that anyone can get access to it, anyone can use it. What we don't want people doing is making money from Perot Shvi'it or gaining wealth from Shvi'it, because it's a year where everybody's equal in the eyes of the Halacha and in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore everybody has equal access. We let people keep the Svichim and the profits from the Svichim after the Zman HaBi'ur, then it would make it that they could somehow collect or make wealth during the Shvi'it, which would be against the spirit of the Shvi'it. And therefore, when it comes to Zman HaBi'ur, you have to get rid of, you have to expunge all types of Dushat Shvi'it that you have with you, including Peirot that were Svichim. And in order to rectify that, you have to make them Hefker before the Zman HaBi'ur, or according to some, you have to actually burn them and rid yourself of them when you get to the Zman HaBi'ur. That's Rashi's explanation. The majority of Rishonim disagree with Rashi. Tosafot over here spends a lot of time challenging Rashi's claim that that adds connected to the Zman HaBi'ur, including the fact that why does Rabbi Akiva need a pasuk to teach you about the Isur of Svichim if it's already subsumed under the regular Isur of Bi'ur, Peirot Shvi'it? And so why do you need a separate pasuk? That's one of their challenges. They have many other challenges that go on, but which will actually have ramifications in their Shita later on. But they believe that the Isur of Svichim has nothing to do with Bi'ur. The Isur of Svichim exists during Shemitah itself. And there is a restriction against one utilizing or eating Peirot Svichim during the Shvi'it. You should just know that the Tosefta in Shvi'it notes that this was a serious issue for the people. I mean, that today we have refrigeration, we have different methodologies for getting through the Shemitah year and having vegetation during that period of time. But in those days, if you couldn't eat Svichim, that Gzeirat Chachamim was a serious impact on the vitality and the economic viability of the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, because now they couldn't eat anything that was planted on Shvi'it because there was nothing planted. And on top of that, you can't eat any of the aftergrowth. It left them with very few choices. And we find in a number of places that the individuals were near starvation or having problems because of the Shemitah year, including in the Sefer HaMakabim, where it describes that being one of the issues that the Hashmonaim had to deal with during their battles with the Greco-Syrians. And with regards to aftergrowths that grow in the 6th year going into the 7th year, or in the 7th year going to the 8th year, we'll come back to that at the end of the Gemara and discuss that, because that obviously has halachic ramifications with regards to halachic lemaisa today with regards to Shemitah. In the interim, we're going to continue in the Gemara. And Svichim, this Igzera, or this issue of Svichim, only applies to basically things that are annuals, like vegetables and grains, which are planted each year. Does not apply to perennials or things like fruits that grow on the tree anyway. They're going to grow whether you work the tree or you make any effort. The trees are going to have produce the next year. So there's no din of Svichim with regards to fruit trees. What exactly the dividing line is between what is not subsumed in the Gezeirah of Svichim is subject to Machloket Achronim, But in general, when it comes to perot eilan, they're not included under svichim. When it comes to things that are tfuah and yerek, they are included under this isur of svichim. And so now the Gemara says, my Rabbi Shimon, what is this din of Rabbi Shimon that we're speaking about here, that he was matir, and that Rabbi Shimon ben Rabbi Yossi ben Lukunya was following his practice with regards to this. Tanya, we have a brayta, or possibly a Mishnah, because the Mishnah in Shvit has actually a different outcome than what's suggested in the Gemara here, and we'll discuss that later in the Tosfot. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, kol asvichim asurim chutz misvichei kruv. All svichim, all aftergrowths are problematic, with the exception of the aftergrowth of the kruv of the cabbage, she'enka yosaban beyerka sadeh, because they are distinct or differentiated than all other vegetation. Chachamim arim, kol asvichim asurim, that all svichim are problematic, including svichei kruv. According to this, the machlok between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim is with regards to svichei kruv. Everybody agrees that the core svichim aftergrowths are problematic. So the question was that extended to svichei kruv, and that's what the story with Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi Ben Lukunya was speaking about, was that he took svichei kruv, Rabbi Shimon, he ate them like his own psak halach over here, and svichei kruv are differentiated. Rashi over here discusses why it is that kruv might be different than other svichim or other vegetation. One of them is the possibility that they grow from their own roots, in that each year they don't need to be replanted in seeds, but rather they grow from their roots or the stalk that is already there, then they expand on what's the existing plant that's there. Therefore, they look much more like a tree or a fruit production than they do like vegetables. And that was the question. Rabbi Shimon said they're like fruit because they're there perennially and they grow from whatever exists in the ground already. And so they're similar to trees and should not be included under the gzera of svichim. As the Chachamim thought otherwise, that they are too close to vegetables. Therefore, people are going to confuse them with the vegetables and they are asurim. And Rashi doesn't love that explanation and brings the second explanation, which is that the kruv is different than other vegetation because they are not kalala chayamina sadeh. They're not something that is ever runs out in the field, meaning that the animals always have access to it, and since they always have access to it, it doesn't have a zmana biur like other vegetables. And since Rashi correlates the din of svichim with biur, he says, well, if kruv doesn't really have a zmana biur, then it shouldn't have a din of svichim as well. And that's the way Rashi explains it, but he says, libi megamgem, that he's still not totally clear on that. And the Balei HaTosafot over here bring a slew of questions on Rashi's explanation. You can understand why Rashi was having somewhat of a difficulty with this, and we'll discuss that again in a minute. So now Gemara says, Tarvayu alibu de Rabbi Kiva. Both of them are saying this in the sheet of Rabbi Kiva. Titanio, have a bright day. It says in Vayikra and Parshat Bahar, when it's speaking about the Shemitah, it says, we're not going to plant, we're not going to gather, then what are we going to eat when it comes to the eighth year? We're going to have nothing left. We didn't plant in the seventh year. We didn't gather anything in the seventh year. Now we have nothing. So, Amar Rav Kiva, if you can't plant, obviously you can't harvest. So why are they talking about harvesting during the seventh year if they didn't plant during the seventh year? If they didn't plant in the seventh year, certainly they have nothing to harvest during the eighth year and there's nothing going to be there. So what is this isur of lo ne'asof, we can't gather? Mikan the svichim she'en asurim. Those are things that grew by themselves. Yes, you can't plant on Shemitah, but maybe there will be things that grow by themselves. Those have a restriction of lo ne'asof. We may not gather them in. From this, Rabbi Akiva believes, min haTorah, there is a restriction against eating those aftergrowths that grew during the Shvi'it. Whereas the Chachamim say that's not the case. It's only asur midrabanan. What exactly that gzera derabanan is not clear. It could be that the gzera derabanan was that we are afraid that if we let you eat the aftergrowths that grow during the Shvi'it, people are going to pretend that they have aftergrowth. They're going to plant things, then say, yeah, it was aftergrowth, and then they're going to do business or they're going to work on Shvi'it by covering it up with saying that these are all svichim, these are all aftergrowths. Therefore, Chazal said, no eating of svichim on Shemitah. But my kamiflige, what is the machloket then? Rabbanan sabri gazrin svichei kruv atushar svichim da'alma. Rabbanan say for Rabbi Kiva, where the regular svichim are asur midoraita, the Chachamim extended that to svichei kruv as well, because it's too similar to other vegetables. Rabbi Shimon sabar lo gazrin svichei kruv ati svichei da'alma. Yes, I hold like Rabbi Kiva that it's asur midoraita. Nevertheless, the Chachamim didn't extend that gzera to the svichei kruv, and therefore he was matir svichei kruv. So this all is premised, or this is all based on the belief that the svichim are asurim according to Rabbi Akiva midoraita, And the question is, do we extend that midrabanan to Sfichei Kruv as well? So that means the Chachamim, who disagree with Rabbi Akiva, and who we Paskin like, believe that Sfichim are not Asurim on Shemitah Midoraita. Nevertheless, from the Machlok between them, and the Chachamim say that they disagree, it only says they disagree that it's a Doraita problem. They think it is a problem midrabanan still, and that Takanat or Gzerat Chachamim exists on Shemitah, and makes that Sfichim are problematic on Shemitah itself. Now, it seemingly, according to the Chachamim, Kruv would definitely not be included because they're only Takanas Derabonon, and therefore Kruv would be a din of Gzera L'Gzera. Today, Tosafot is then perplexed or bothered by the fact that if that's the case, there's nobody who is Matir Sfichim during Sfit. But what the Tosafot points out is that Hiksher Rabbeinu Nisim Agon, Deip Kashmina Leib Masechet Sfit in Perek Tet, Mishnah Aleph, which if you look in the Masorah Shas, he quotes as the source from the Right that we just quoted, but over there it just says the opposite. It says Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kol Asfichim Mutarim, Chutz Misfichei Kruv. All Sfichim are Mutar, with the exception of Kruv. Shein Giotzvam Kriyaka Sadeh, because they're not similar to other vegetations. So it makes it sound like Rabbi Shimon believed that all Sfichim are Mutarim. If that's the case, how can the Gemara over here be saying that Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Kiva, that all Sfichim are Surim, and we're just extending it to Sfichei Kruv? So to answer that question, the Tosafot comes up with a solution which has huge nafkamina d'alocha, which is that it depends on how these Sfichim grew. If the Sfichim grew entirely in the Shemitah year, in the Shvi'it year, they are Asurim. That's according to Rabbi Kiva Midoraita. According to the Rabbanan, Midorabanan, they are Asurim and problematic. And then you have the question with Rabbi Akiva, do you extend it to Kruv or don't extend it to Kruv? That's Machloket Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and the Chachamim. On the other hand, there's another type of Sviach, which is after growth from the sixth year. It already started to grow in the sixth year, but then it only was picked during the seventh year. In general, the principles with regards to vegetables are, we go butter lakita, go after when they're picked. When they're picked determines their year for maestro, trumol, and with regards to shemitah. So over here, if you pick them in the seventh year, it would sound like they are svichei shvit. But the truth is, they started to grow in the sixth year. And that's what Tosafot makes a distinction here, that svichim that began to grow in the sixth year, and already have emerged before the seventh year enters, then even though they're picked on the seventh year, they don't have a din of svichim of aftergrowths, and they are mutarim. They will have kedushat shvi'it, because they were picked on the shemitah year, and so they will have a din like shemitah, but they will not be asur, because they're not called svichei shvi'it, because the cutoff for svichim is the day of Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, as long as they were out of the ground or emerged before Rosh Hashanah, that is sufficient already to make them that they are already classified as belonging to the sixth year, and they don't have a din of Svichim. They will only have a din of Kedushat Shvi'it, which will they be allowed to be picked on Shemitah year. They have to be eaten with Kedushat Shvi'it, and they can't be done l'schora, but they can't be done in a commercial manner, but they still will be allowed to be eaten, and that's how Tosafot reconciles this problem. And therefore, he says that Svichim going to feed into Shvi'it are Mutarim. And that is the view of the majority of the Rishonim, that when you go from the sixth year into the seventh year, those Sfichim are not Asurim, even though the Rambam disagrees and says that Shishit into Shvi'it also is problematic in terms of Sfichim. Nevertheless, the Achronim try to explain the Rambam to match it more along the lines of the view of the Tosafot here, because the Rambam is very hard to explain with regards to the Mishnah that we just quoted. In addition, most of the major Poskim of our Dor, the Chazanish, Rav Adi Yosef, the Pata Shulchan, all paskind, like the Rosh Mishantz, and the majority of Rishonim, like the Balei Tosafot, that if it began to grow in the Shishit, that's enough. And again here, the Chazon Ish was very makil that if there was any form of emergence or rooting that took place before Rosh Hashanah, that they were not considered Svichei Shvi'it, and they were considered to be Svichei Shishit. Rambam also has an additional Chumrah, which is that if something started to grow as aftergrowth in the Shvi'it that was only picked on the eighth year, that also has a din of Svichim. That seems to be a gzeira, at least according to the Achronim, as to either days were Yerakot that were really picked on the Shemitah year, and now people are saying they were picked on the eighth year and they got mixed up, or we're worried about people planting on the Shemitah year and then harvesting on the eighth year and saying that they were aftergrowth. We don't allow it, and therefore Svichei Shvi'it that come in eighth year and are picked in the eighth year, most people are choshesh with the sheet of the Rambam, and they treat them like svichim, and they are asurim, until you clear out the possibility of them being svichim, and therefore, after that point in time, in the marketplace, all vegetables that are found no longer have a chashash of svichei shvi'it. There is a machloket arishonim as to whether something where you know for certain it was picked in the eighth year and not in the seventh year, whether that is mutar. We are generally machmir even for that, even if we know they were picked during the eighth year, even though there are dissenting opinions, and in a shatat chak it could be mekil. The other thing to note is that this is all with regards to vegetation. When it comes to things like grains and other items where you have svichim, their determination as to whether they're svichim in the seventh year or the sixth year is determined by their onat hamasrot, which is gidul shlish, when they grow at least a third of their maturation. When they read their point of onat hamasrot, that determines whether they belong to the sixth year or the seventh year, and if they're the sixth year, they're not svichim, or if they're the seventh year, they are svichim. Anyway, all of this obviously has major implications with regards to the Shemitah year that is practiced in Eretz Yisrael. Now the Gemara says, Haloich mimakom, person who goes from a place where they're machmir to the place where they're mekil or vice versa, yeskid the chumrei shnei makomot. And then the Mishnah gives a nimuk, gives an explanation as to why that is the case, because ayishnei adam ifnei machloket. Person shouldn't change the practice because otherwise it'll cause discord or disagreement. And the Gemara says, bishlam haloich mimakom shosim makom sheino sim. That makes sense when you go from a place that does something to a place where they don't do it, meaning that the chumrah is in the place where you're going, where they abstain from something. Then the reason that you enforce on him and say, keep the practices of the place that you come to, is because, don't make waves here, don't create discord, and therefore you should not engage in malacha in this place, because that's the practice here. If you do that, you'd be abrogating the local minhag, and you would be causing discord because you're acting against that which is the practice here. I mean, makom she'eino osim, the makom she'osim, you go from a place where they don't do malacha to a place where they do malacha. What does that mean? Ayishe adam ipnei machloket v'navid? You're going to say now that a person should not create discord, and therefore he should work on Erev Pesach in order to be that there's no differentiation between him and them. But that means that you're not keeping the chumrei makom she'yotza misham. He's now keeping the kula of the place he went to in order not to be mishanei ipnei machloket. So how do I explain the explanation for the reasoning behind why you keep the chumrei makom she'yotza sham and halach l'sham, when it only applies in one direction? It only applies when the chumrah is in the place that you came to. But if the chumrah is from the place you left, then the machloket is created by maintaining your practice from there and keeping that chumrah. So amart, but you already said, notim alav chumrei makom she'halach l'sham v'chumrei makom she'yotza misham. And he should have to keep the chumrah where he left. So how can now he start doing work in the place that he went to? So amar abayi areisha. But he says it's not a problem. That nimuk, that explanation, is only an explanation for why when you go from a place that has a minog to do work, and you go to a place where they don't do work, that's explaining why you shouldn't do work. It's because I should have been a makloket. But vice versa, that's not giving the explanation. Vice versa, when you had the practice not to work when you left, and you got to the new place over there, you don't do that because it's chumrei makom she'yotza misham. You have to keep the chumrot of the place that you left. And that, we don't have the nimuk, we don't have the explanation of machloket, because that's not relevant in that situation. There, the governing principle is chumrei makom she'yotza misham. On the other hand, Rav Amar lo amaseifa, it's going on both parts of the Mishnah, which is that both when you keep chumrei makom she'yotza misham and chumrei makom she'halach l'sham, the reason is because of minipnei shinui machloket. We don't want you getting into discord or disagreements by practicing something different than the local practices. V'achin kamar, and this is where it says, Ein b'zum ipnei shinui machloket. You came to chumrei makom where you came from, that doesn't cause machloket. My kamart, what are people going to say? Haroya omer amlacha asura. What do you think? The person who sees him not doing work is going to say, oh, this guy thinks that melacha is asura, and that's why he's not doing work? Meimar amrei, kama batoni, avi b'shuka. There are many of people who are unemployed or doing nothing in the shuk all day. Nothing to do with the minhag. And so therefore, they'll just assume that you're lazy, they'll assume that you're unemployed, they'll assume that you're rich, whatever it is, that you don't need to do work. And therefore, abstaining from work is not an indication that you have a minhag v'esor, and therefore it's not going to create discord, because people's assumptions, there are many things they can assume as to why you're not doing work, which will not cause it to be that you're abrogating the minhag of the makom. And so that's the reason for both sides in the Mishnah. The reason that when you go to a place that has a chumrah, you have to keep the chumrah, is because we don't want to have a machloket or discord by you doing something different actively by working in a place where they don't work. If you come from a place where they don't work to a place where they do work, your abstaining from work is also not going to cause machloket, because there are other explanations for your behavior. And therefore you're governed by the fact that you have to keep the chumrei makom she'yatza misham, the chumrot of the place that you left. But according to Rava, technically if you could come up with a scenario whereby your practice of keeping the chumrah where you left from would be obvious that you're keeping a chumrah in the face of those individuals that were practicing Lekula, then you would have to keep the practice Lekula. And you go Lekula. Mipnei HaMachloket is the governing principle over here. As long as Mipnei HaMachloket doesn't get abrogated, then you have to keep Chumrei HaMakom Sheyotza Misham. But if it's a clash between Chumrei HaMakom Sheyotza Misham and Machloket, Machloket governs and you go Lekula. According to Abaye, that's not the case. According to Abaye, Mipnei HaMachloket is only the governing principle when you're going from a place to Kula to the Chumrah. But when you come from a place that's the Chumrah to a Kula, you have to keep the Chumrah even if it causes Machloket. You can't be Mekil even if that causes some sort of Machloket or disagreement or discord, because you have to keep the practices of where the place that you came from. That'd be the nafkamina between them. When there's a clash between those two principles, Bayi will say that the Chumrah governs, and Rova will say that Machloket governs, and therefore you'd have to go the Kula. Okay, we're going to stop here, two lines from the bottom of Nun Aleph, Amud Bet.